My pleasure to have as my guest today Ellen Coyle Mighton. Ellen is one of the descendants of the people who started the Interior News way back when. Ellen, when did that happen?
1907, yes. It was the Buckley Pioneer, and then my father changed the name to Interior News and started first in Aldermere, and I was born at that time in the Hazleton Hospital, because it was the only hospital in the district then. And then we lived in Aldermere, and until Aldermere finally folded up and everyone moved to Telkwa.
Do you recall why your father would have come to this part of the country to start a newspaper?
Yes. He really started in the newspaper office when he was about 12. He came of a large family, a farming family in Ontario, and he was one of the younger ones, and the older boys kept the farm. The girls married and moved away, and my father, at the age of 12, got a job in the local little newspaper office, just as cleanup boys, sweeping the floor and delivering the papers to the farming community. And then at the age of 17, he went to Ottawa and got work in the printing shop of the archive department in the Parliament buildings, and worked there for some years, and then for a few years, at any rate. And then a man, a salesman came in who was working for the promoting the Simplex typesetting machine. And he seemed to take a liking to Dad, or to notice Dad, and think he was a very ambitious young man, and invited him to be a demonstrator, to go to travel around wherever the machines were sold throughout the country, and to demonstrate how to use them. Because they were, they had the lead type, and the lead type would fall down, and there was kind of a typesetting machine that. So my father liked to travel, and so he took that job, traveled through the states with it. And in 1906, he was out in Washington State, and demonstrating it, and I forget what town they had to put one in, I think Linden or one of the places. And then he somehow heard of a newspaper opening in Juneau, Alaska. So he applied for it and went up to Juneau and worked on the newspaper there for Eddie Russell for a couple of years. And he had printer's ink in his blood. And so he decided that it was a nice, he liked the country, and he decided to go into the interior and start a newspaper of his own. So he looked around and he thought the Buckley Valley was the best place, and so he went to Aldermere, which was quite a little town then, and started there. And then the difficulty with Aldermere was getting water there, because they had to pack the water in pails, you know, wearing a yoke and the pails on the side. And he also had to go down to Crotus Ranch to get milk for me when I was a baby, pack it up the trail. And so most people moved away from Aldermere, and Telkwa was the big town then. So they moved down to Telkwa, and Dad was one of the last to leave the hill, so Mother said. And
now, we're a lot of people have heard that Aldermere was the original town, but many of us are not sure exactly the proximity of Aldermere to Telkwa. Whereabouts was Aldermere?
It was just up in the heights. It's called Aldermere Heights now, and there are some houses up there. Tona Hetherington took me there the other day, and we saw the, I didn't go up because I was here in 1962 with my brother and my father, and we went up the trail. So it's just really just on the hill above Telkwa, very close.
Between Telkwa and the lake, would that be right?
It would be, but yes, this tiny lake, mm-hmm. is it, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's, you're in Telkwa, you go to the end of the town of Telkwa, and you go up the hill, and that's Aldermere. There's a row of houses now, and it's called Aldermere Heights. And when I was little, I can remember my father built a sleigh for me and had, I suppose it was a packing box on top, and had a riding light on it, a lantern, a stick with a lantern on top, and he would take me through the woods there, and then roaring down that Aldermere, the hill from Aldermere to Telkwa, and I can still remember the thrill I got riding like that with him.
Okay, back to the newspaper business then. When your dad first started in Aldermere then, how many employees would he have had and who would have been his reporter at that time?
It was a one-man operation. He did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, in Aldermere, we had the living quarters, the house, and then there were old pictures of it, and then the low part was his shop. So there was always the rumble of the press, and I, as a little girl, would go in and stand and watch my father set the type. Everything was set by hand, and he did all the printing and all the folding of the newspapers and the sending them out, and it was, I suppose it was a once a week paper, I don't know. And news was gathered word of mouth. Dad would go down to the hotel, and there'd be people from all over, and they would say, well, this happened here, and then something that other else happened here, and then the pack trains would come in, and they would bring news. And then when the Yukon Telegraph went through, when they had that, then they got the international news. At the time of the war, they got the war news through the and Murphy was the telegraph operator at the time, and there's an old picture of Dad and Mr. Murphy standing in Aldermere.
Do you remember any big issue during that time that may have been reported that might have been a little bit controversial or anything?
No, I don't. It was mostly what people were interested in then were social news. It was a very social community. It had to be, because it was in the wintertime they were completely locked into the country. There was no way of getting out. There was no way of mail coming in. And Mother said what few books there were passed from hand to hand until they were absolutely worn out in old catalogs. Anything for reading matter. And, of course, no food would come in. They were completely self-supporting. And
during the winter months?
Yeah, during the winter. No fruits, no... And Mother, who had come from London, England, was used to more of a city life, found it rather frightening at first to be completely locked in like that for so many months of the year.
Mm-hmm. So then, when did the operation then move to Smithers?
After Aldermere, Dad didn't go down to Telfer. He came right to Smithers from Aldermere. So I suppose it would be about, I must have been about 1913, 14, around that time. Yes, it must have been 13, because he was in Smithers at the outbreak of the First World War, 1914.
Now, what do you remember about Smithers? You would have been in your teens, would you, when you have moved to Smithers?
Oh no! I was three, I think, when we moved to Smithers,
mm-hmm.
And I was six when we left.
Uh-huh. Do you remember anything about? For instance, the muskeg and the ditches. That's always a big topic.
I remember the ditch very well. And another thing, the smell of the clearing land, because there were just, I imagine, about 10 buildings along Main Street and boardwalks, and they were rather raised, and I know that I used to gather ferns from underneath the sidewalk to take home to Mother. And there was the interior news with an aspen forest behind it, and I used to climb the trees, and a forest on the other side, and then Dootson the butcher was on the right-hand side as you face the old interior news office. It's still there with an alpine front to it. And then the ditch, oh yes. I used to play with Muriel Adams, who lived at, whose father was Mason Adams, the druggist. They had an apartment upstairs. The building is still there. It's a clothing store now, almost kitty-corner from the old interior news office. And I used to have to cross the ditch to her place. It was, to me, I was a little girl of five then, and the ditch looked enormous. I don't suppose it was. There were planks across it to cross by, but it was full of muddy water with a green scum on it, and so I'd have to cross there to go to her place. And one time, I don't know how it happened, I fell into it. And I don't remember being terribly disturbed. I suppose I was, but I went home to Mother. Mother was horrified. I went upstairs in the interior news, dripping with dirty water and all this green scum in my hair. And Mother just took me and dipped me in the bathtub, clothes and all. I can remember how horrified she was. But They, of course, they were clear, and then across the street was all vacant lots, and they were beginning to clear. They had cut down trees, and my memories of that part of that time in Smithers was the hearing of blasting of stumps, you know, getting the stumps out of the way, and then the smell of burning brush. And wherever I am in the world and I smell a burning brush, I'm taken right away to Smithers. Just the smell brings me back to that old time.
The railroad would then have just been near completion when you were here?
It came while we were here, and there was great excitement at the time. The first train went through.
So prior to the railroad, then everything that you would have received in the way of goods or materials would then have come by pack train?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that would have come mostly from the Hazleton?
From Hazleton, yes.
They would come up from the...
I suppose from Prince Rupert up the Skeena by paddle steamer and then by pack train. And there are many old pictures of the pack trains that came through to Aldermere, and they even brought up one of Dad's presses that way. Of course, everything had to be dismantled. When the first car came up, it was dismantled and brought in by pack train and then put together again when it got here.
The first car, do you remember?
I don't know, but there is a picture of the Smithers Hotel, the Buckley Hotel, and in front of it there's a row of cars, and those were the first cars to come up. And I'm in one of them with Muriel Adams, and there was quite a celebration to have the cars come in. And I can remember sitting on the board sidewalk and watching a car come up the road, and I thought it was so wonderful. It looked like a picture show. You'd see this car coming up this dirt road.
I don't expect the roads were all that great.
Oh, no, they were just dirt roads, and of course mud in the spring. I don't particularly remember the mud. I remember the ice and snow going to school across the snowy fields, but I remember the dust. And Dad was a wonderful father. He took me everywhere, and he was so in all the old pictures that of the group of the trade union men, because Dad would go around wherever there was a group to collect news, and in the hotel, and I'm always sitting either at his feet or standing somewhere nearby when I was, well, two or three years old, and there's always a cloud of dust, I'm usually hidden, a cloud of dust is blowing around.
Okay, from Smithers then, where did your folks go after that?
After Smithers, we went to Vancouver, because when my father was in Aldermere, he invented an egg box, an egg carton. Jack McNeil at the Telqua Hotel in Aldermere had complained about the breakage of eggs coming in the way they did. There was always a certain amount of loss on them. And so my father went home and developed a box that had a cushion bottom that would, where the eggs were individually placed, and it would protect the eggs. And he demonstrated it, and they used it and found it very, very successful. They were delighted with it. So I suppose my father made quite a lot of them by hand just for the local, and then in 1919 he decided to, or 1918 I expect it was, he decided to sell the paper and take a flyer on this egg box, and went down to Vancouver and got people interested in it, and began to develop it in Vancouver for a couple of years. And then in 1920, we went to Los Angeles. He decided that he would start it in Los Angeles, and he started a small one-man factory in San Pedro Street, Los Angeles. My mother and I would go down. Mother would go to help him, because not only did he invent the carton, but he had to design the machines to make the carton. And though he hadn't, I don't suppose he had gone beyond grade 5 in school, he was had a wonderfully inventive mind, and he was an omnivorous reader. He was a self-educated man, and really very brilliant in inventing things. So the carton got going. It was a bad time, because it was during the depression of the 20s, and between 21 and 24 it was a very hard time to get a business going. So it took a while, but then it It began to expand. He had quite a lot of customers, and he had got a promoter interested in it. And a factory was then later opened in Chicago and New York and Toronto. So
it ended up being quite successful.
Yes, quite successful. Though we lived mainly on the royalties of it, because Dad began to, as he needed money to develop, he began selling interests in the carton, and this promoter then got control of that carton. Then my father invented a little slightly different carton for his own self. And even when he was in his 80s, he was had developed another carton and was making it in New Westminster, just starting more or less as a hobby, and then it got out of hand. Became quite a business with my brother to help him, and sometimes they would hire a few another person to help to make the carton.
And what about yourself now? What are you doing now, Alan?
Well, I'm retired, but I'm a retired teacher, and I taught in Ontario. Began my teaching career when Dad's business was in London, Ontario, and Toronto. And then I, of course, I had lived in California as a child and gone to high school there, and I loved Santa Monica and that part of the coast. So as soon as I saved up enough money, and salaries for teachers were very low at that time in the 30s, I got $300 together and went to California, mm-hmm. took the bus, Greyhound, and then finally ended up teaching in Santa Monica for some years. And then my parents had, in the meantime, after Dad retired, moved out to New Westminster. And so Mother was in her, when Mother got into her 80s, she'd write to me. My husband died in 1955. So my mother would write and say, well, she wasn't able to do her work the way she used to. And it bothered me a bit. I thought, what am I doing living here by myself in an apartment, and where I could be closer helping my mother, taking her out and so on. I applied for a school up near the Canadian border, and Bellingham was the closest. So I accepted a school in Bellingham. At that time, schools were, you could almost have your choice. That was in the late 40s. Mm-hmm. So I came.
So you've been doing
in the 50s, rather, mm-hmm. 57, 59.
You've been doing a bit of traveling, have you?
Oh, yes. Yes, since I've retired. And when I was teaching, too, I used to take the summers off. And I made my first trip when I came up from California, because I was between teaching jobs. And I thought I'd always wanted to go to Europe. And so I took 3 months off and traveled around. And now I go quite frequently.
So you're in Smithers then for the 80th anniversary?
Yes. I've been here a week. Uh-huh. And it was the first time I had flown up, of course, from Smithers. I had driven up with my brother in 1962, but it was quite a fantastic flight to look down and see Smithers from the air, and to see the Buckley River and how winding it is, mm-hmm. and the mountains. It really was lovely. And the first day I walked around town feeling a bit like a ghost, trying to get the two visions of Smithers together, my vision of the boardwalk streets and the ditch, and then the new Smithers with the Alpine appearance. And then I began to meet people, and the staff of the Interior News, Rod, and I had dinner with them the first night. And then I made so many friends that now I feel I have the new Smithers and the old Smithers very well put together.
Thank you very much, Alan. Speaking with Alan Coyle-Mighton, the descendants of the founder of the Interior News, this is Carol Morgan-Foley.